Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Harold Lacy is our good friend and our special guest this hour. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He is the author of Financing Your Business Dreams with Other People's Money. I like that title. Harold's been doing this for 25 years. He's been helping small business owners successfully locate money for their enterprises. He's been a banker and an entrepreneur for all those years. He's worked closely with the SBA, and his book is absolutely doing great. Welcome back, Harold.
Jim, it's a pleasure to be with you always.
It's good to have you back, and tell us again where the book is. I know last time I talked to you, didn't you tell me it was in the second or third printing?
We're going to be doing our third printing here in about 60 days.
Third printing.
Still going very, very well, thank you.
You know, when I first started talking to you, it was in its first printing. So look at what we've done for you since you've been on the show. Well, wait a minute, Harold. I wasn't telling a joke. Harold, let's talk about something you call having a checklist for rating your banking relationship.
Right. You know, when it comes to bankers, they really are a partner in your business because they're the ones that provide the financing. And as we've chatted about before, not all bankers are created equal. There's some that are more, I call, active in helping you, the small business person, than others. And unfortunately, with all the mergers and acquisitions, the larger banks have kind of dropped the ball with getting involved with the client and their particular needs. Each business is different. So I always try to work with a client in doing a checkup on really evaluating how good of a banking relationship and how good of a banker, and I think that's a key word, how good their banker is taking care of them.
What does that checklist look like?
Well, first of all, you want to focus and not concentrate on just that interest rate. I see so many people focusing and they'll change banking relationships over a quarter of a percent.
Yeah.
Interest rate's important, but the banking relationship buys a whole lot more than the best interest rate in town. One of the things that I talk about in my book, I devote one whole chapter in establishing that banking relationship and focusing on how important that is. One of the things that I think is important is, does your banker and the bank provide periodic seminars, and do they send you to different educational programs that are put on to help you with in key areas such as marketing or human relations or
value-added services,
Y2K, anything.
Yeah.
Anything that will help make you a better business person, which in turn makes a better bank customer because it reduces the risk.
I want to go back first. Before we get into the value add, I want to go back and talk about the rate for just a minute.
Yeah.
You said don't be so rate sensitive, especially if you have found a good banker.
Uh-huh.
If you've got somebody, folks, who is part of your team, someone who knows your story, up one side and down the other, and that you believe that you could go and talk to them if you had a problem, and they would help you solve that problem. In this day and time, when you can borrow money, you know, a half a point, 1 point, around 8%, 8.5%, 9%, you can be successful with borrowing money at 8 to 9%, can't you?
Absolutely.
And so
Absolutely.
When you're in that range, don't be penny wise and pound foolish, because a good banker partner is more important than even, in my opinion, than even a whole point.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I've seen people make that mistake and reluctantly have to go back to their old banker on hands and knees, so they find out that quarter of a percent, the half percent that they thought they were really saving, in the long run, as you said, it was penny wise and pound foolish, because they just didn't have the relationship, they didn't get the response, and they didn't have someone that really understood their business.
Your capital, your availability to borrow money, and not only just to borrow money, but you're checking a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There may be times in your business when you need to have an overdraft situation in your account.
Absolutely.
And you need to have a banker that will work with you and will understand what's going on. And all of that can drop right to the bottom line, and it may cost you a lot more money in your company on the bottom off your bottom line to do business with a bank that tries to lowball the interest rate than somebody who says, look, I know what it costs us to provide you with the kind of services that, you're going to need, and this is the rate. It may not be the cheapest, but this is what it takes.
And another thing, too, with especially in this economy, when so many businesses are doing so well with sales and growth, one of the key components that they need is additional financing to fund that growth. And, Jim, we're talking about the banker again.
Yep.
And is that banker going to go to bat for you in the loan committee, or are they a passive type of person that they just feel that that loan amount is something that they feel comfortable with, they just don't want to extend themselves?
And conversely, if you've got a bad banker, but they've got the best rate, leave them. Go to the more expensive rate and find a good banker.
Yeah. They're out there.
Yeah, exactly. Now, they're not always
easy. You have to talk, and we can chat about that. And I go into great detail in the book of how to go through that process of finding out where the aggressive bankers are and how to approach them so you don't jeopardize your present banking relationship.
Right.
Because you don't want to do that.
And because of the competitive nature of the banking industry right now, you ought to be able to find, as you say, Harold, an aggressive banker. Now let's go back. Let's go into your what I'm calling the value added, and that's where you were talking about what has your banker done for you lately that's
right.
off the balance sheet, so to speak. Something that adds value to your company from a training standpoint or whatever.
Right. And another thing too, a good banker will bring into the picture what I call a backup officer, because you never know when you have an emergency and you need to talk to someone, get maybe a check covered, get a quick advance, and your bank officer is either on vacation, unavailable, maybe has left the bank, and then all of a sudden you have to go back through that whole process.
And guess what? When you need them the most, that's when there'll be a revision. It happens every time. Murphy has a law about that, I think.
That's right.
Stand by, Harold. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Harold Lacy is our special guest and our good friend. He's the author of Financing Your Business Dreams with Other People's Money. It's a great book. We'll talk about it some more in a minute. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. Our special guest is our very good friend, Harold R. Lacy. Harold's been with us many times before and talking to us about how to get financing, how to borrow money, how to raise capital for our businesses to make sure that we can not only stay in business, but that we can grow. And because that's one of the most important things that you have to pay attention to. And what we're talking about right now is something that Harold calls the checklist for rating your banking relationship. And our phone number, if you'd like to call us, is 1-888-822-8255. If you're having a problem with your banker, if you're looking for a banker, if you've got a business that you want to get financed and you'd like to know how to do that, I've got one of the experts on the show with us right now, 888-822-8255. Let's continue our checklist, Harold.
Sure. The next thing that I think is kind of important for the business person that very few bankers do, and it's what I call your checklist or review of your interest rate, because the thing that most businesses and bankers fall in the trap of is that they fall asleep at the wheel of a company that started with the bank maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago and has since grown and has really become a lot stronger, and so the risk of the business has been reduced to the bank. At the same time, the account balances have increased substantially. And as we know, that interest rate is a function of those two things, risk and the compensating balances that are carried there.
Right.
So that the rate that you start out with maybe 5 or 6 years ago with 1 over or 1.5 over, sometimes 2 over, now needs to be reduced substantially to maybe 0.5 over,
maybe
or
prime.
Even prime rate.
Now, bankers are
reluctant to bring that up because it's going to cost them money. But in the long run, it cements that relationship. It's a long-term decision.
Tell us about, define compensating balances for us.
Compensating balances are the balances that you keep in your business checking account and your personal checking account and any balances of any companies you get credit for that you've referred to that banker as a new customer.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all incorporated into a formula that is then calculated against the amount of your borrowings that you have outstanding at any one time. Say, for example, if you're borrowing, you have a $50,000 line of credit, but you're only into that line maybe 80 days of the year,
mm-hmm.
the bank has use of all of those compensating balances to be lending out to other companies. Now, that compensating factor would be very, very good at reducing your interest rate, as opposed to, let's say, for example, you had a $50,000 line of credit and you were using that 300 days of the year.
You might be surprised, Harold. People might be surprised at what their average daily balance is.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that the thing you need to ask for rather than compensating? Compensating balance is sort of a subjective term, isn't it? But average daily balance is your real average daily balance.
The banker will furnish that to you. A good banker will show you what it is. But if you ask just as a question, say, yeah, I just was wondering what my average daily balance, you know, they can give you a printout.
Yep.
And you're right. You'll be shocked because when you're writing those checks sometimes take 4 or 5 days, sometimes if they stayed a week to 10 days to clear. But in the meantime, that money is sitting there idle.
Yeah, see, what's happening is you're sitting there looking at your checkbook.
Yeah.
And you're saying, okay, you know, there's no way that, you know, I never have more than a $500 balance or whatever in my account. But that's because you've taken all the checks off on your checkbook, but that's not what's happened at the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You may find out that you've got a $4,000 or $5,000 average daily balance.
People are shocked. They're shocked more on the positive side than on the negative because of that exact fact, Jim.
And when you go, if you should decide to shop around with another banker, you need that to know that information.
Absolutely.
Because that's one of the key things
they're going to be asking when you discuss interest rate. They're going to want to know, number one, what's your average balance is running at the bank, number two, what collateral is available, and the strength of your guarantee. All of those are negotiable items, all of them. And going back to that relationship that started maybe 5 or 7 years ago, you can renegotiate not only that interest rate, which you need the average balance figure for, you can also renegotiate the amount of collateral that you've put up. Maybe you had to put up your house initially to get started. Okay, now let's take a look at just the assets of the business.
I want to talk about
your personal guarantee also.
We'll take a break. When we come back, I really want to focus on this issue, and especially with regard to collateral, because this is a real key issue, as you say, especially if you're with a bank that you've been with for a while. Stand by. We've got to take a quick break. It's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Harold Lacy is our special guest. He's the author of Financing Your Business Dreams with Other People's Money. Welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. Harold Lacy is our special guest and the author of Financing Your Business Dreams with Other People's Money. Harold, where can I get this book?
They can get it at any of the national book chain stores. Local ones have it, the Barnes & Noble, Borders. Also, I've seen sales really increase over the last 8 months through Amazon because it's so easy to order over the internet and telephone, so
yeah.
Amazon's been a real good outlet for us also.
Great. And folks, it's about to go into its third printing. Now, do you know what that means? That means it's a darn good book. And which as you know, we don't have anything else on this show. My audience knows I don't bring chopped liver on this show. Only the best for my folks. Your organization is called the Money Institute.
That's correct.
And give us a website.
We're working on that. Probably will have it up in about 10 days.
Okay, I was thinking that you'd just gotten it up.
No, we're still working, getting a few links lined up with some of the people I've worked with that are working with small businesses that's going.
But I do know you have an email address.
Yes, halacy@aol.com.
It looks like Halacy, Halacy at AOL?
AOL.
AOL.com. Check it out, folks. Do you have a phone number?
303-526-7875.
And if you miss any of that and you'd like to get in touch with Harold, folks, let me know, and I'll be sure to put you in contact with him. Harold, when we took the break, we were talking about our checklist that you've created for rating your banking relationship, and one of the things we were talking about was compensating balances. We were talking about the interest rate. We were talking about collateral.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were saying was that if you've been with a bank for a while, 4 or 5 years maybe, probably the first bank that you started out doing business with when you would have done anything almost to have gotten that loan, and your banker knew that, and so they basically got everything. They got your, you know, you borrowed $100,000, but they've got your equipment, they've got your receivables, they've got your inventory. I'm talking about collateral here, folks. They've got all this recorded. They've got your inventory, collateral, your receivables. They've got your home. They've got your personal guarantee. Basically, they're locked up seven ways from Sunday, right, Harold?
They've got you.
Now, one of the hardest things that you'll ever do as a small business owner is to get a banker to turn any of that loose. And the only way, Harold, that I know of, not the only way, but the most likely way is to do one of two things. Let them know that they're now in a competitive situation, or actually move the business.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, and you can even use a wicked partner other than the threat of a bank, because bankers get the hair on the back of their neck up real quickly when you start saying, well, I think you ought to release the collateral. I think.
Yeah.
They become very argumentative because they look at you as, well, you don't understand our business. But you can deflect that very quickly by using another bank as the wicked partner, or one of your business advisors, either your accountant, someone that you use periodically that's on your advisory committee, of saying they've brought it up and they reviewed it and they feel like this collateral is excessive, you know, make them the bad person.
Well, I've been talking to my advisors. I've been talking to members of my board. I've been working with the consultant who's trying to help me get my business, you know, kind of take us to the next level.
Exactly.
And what we've been doing, we've been looking around and noticing what's in the marketplace. And my condition has changed. My situation is different from when it was, from when we started doing business 2 or 3 years ago. And we're taking a complete new look at everything, including our banking situation.
Exactly.
And I would like for you to be part of that solution. What do you think?
And the thing, too, is you want to then compliment the banker, saying, you know, I really like working with you, Fred.
Couldn't have done what I've done.
It's really been great, but my advisors are pushing me on this. My board of directors are pushing me. You know, so you can maintain that positive one-on-one relationship with the banker, but it's business, and you've got some other considerations to keep happy, too, and how can we make this a win-win situation?
Well, and here's the other thing, Harold. You're not the first person in the world that's ever had this conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't feel like you're the first person that they've ever heard this from. They've heard it. In fact, they heard it this morning from somebody else.
Right.
So it's not like you're going to be some kind of a weirdo for doing this.
No, and bankers, it is a real hot button with them, because it reflects on their career of when they're reviewed by their peers and their boss of how much business have they brought in, and to lose an account to another bank is a very, very degrading and very hot button with bankers. They will do almost anything to keep an existing relationship. And conversely, too, they'll do anything to bring in a relationship from another bank. But where they drop the ball is they start taking business for granted that they already have on the books, because it's like so many of us, we're looking for that new sale, and we ignore the existing client that has been with us through the good days and the bad days, and has also maybe sometimes brought in additional business. That's another thing that bankers don't give you a lot of credit for, is when you've referred a new client to the bank that is working for them.
Exactly. Harold, when we come back, I want to talk about what you can do to get this collateral released in the early stages before you even do business with this banker, some steps, some incremental steps that you can take. And then I want to move on and talk about angel investors. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Harold Lacy is our special guest and our good friend, the author of Financing Your Business Dreams with Other People's Money. We'll be right back. How could it be? We are back at 44 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Just remember the name of the show, but the normal stuff on the front and the back. And our phone number is 888-822-8255. If you'd like to give us a call or our expert and talk to our expert, Harold Lacy, about your banking situation or about trying to capitalize your company, 888-822-8255. Harold Lacy is our guest, and he's the author of Financing Your Business Dreams with Other People's Money. The book is available in virtually all bookstores. They can order it for you if they don't have it, but all the online bookstores, right, Harold?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's the color of money, folks. It's green and gold. Harold, when we took a break, we were talking about this checklist for rating your banking relationship, and we were talking about how to get collateral released from your banker. One of the best ways to do that is to have talked about it with your banker before you ever make the loan.
Absolutely, because it's a discussion that's very easy to bring up of just saying, okay, I don't mind pledging my house, don't mind pledging personal assets. At what time can we sit down and review this on an annual basis or in 2 years about what goals do we need to achieve in the company as far as profits, accessing the line of credit, how many days we're out of debt, that we can start taking a look at reducing the personal assets. Then the next step later on is start reducing the amount of corporate assets as the company becomes stronger and the net worth and the equity position.
If it's a brand new company, Harold, you're likely not to have as much corporate assets as you do personal assets.
Right.
Maybe you got $50,000 collateral, of loanable equity in your home, and the equipment and the inventory that you're buying is $50,000 worth of collateral value. So that's $100,000. That's the loan you make. And so all you got to do is say, okay, guys, if I perform over the next year or two or whatever, and I'm able to replace the value in my home, that my home is collateralizing this loan, with inventory, with AR, with equipment, with retained earnings. If I'm able to replace that, I want to be, just say, I want to be able to have my home released. And then you want to have them put that in the agreement, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And bankers are willing to do that, but you have to bring it up.
But once, yes, you not only do you have to bring it up, but if you don't get it to start with, it'll be almost impossible to get them to release that collateral later on if you haven't talked about it beforehand.
Yeah, and you will stand out in their mind as being a business person by bringing it up, because not very many people bring it up ahead of time. They usually ask for it later on about having it released, and bankers will procrastinate and say, well, we need to give it another 6 months, and let me take a look at it. They'll procrastinate, and just like you said, Jim, they will drag their feet till eternity. But if you have followed the steps we've talked about of laying the groundwork of saying, and that you're expecting that at some point, 6 months, a year and a half, that some of these things are going to be released, and starting with the personal assets, you're laying the groundwork, and they will respect that. They really will.
And it might not be the home. It may be a someone else's guarantee. Maybe you
Absolutely.
Had someone else to sign the note with you, or maybe it was some other asset. It doesn't matter what it is. But if you ask and they say, or you recommend that they put it in, or that they do it, and they agree to it, don't be satisfied with the verbal commitment. Make sure they write it down, because guess what? The person who gave you that verbal commitment might not be with the bank in a year or two.
And also might be a new owner, too.
That's exactly right. Okay, let's move on down and talk about something else. You talk about having a backup or a standby loan commitment.
Sure.
What's that?
This is, I think, very critical, especially in today's banking environment where you're seeing a lot of changes in loan officers, a lot of change in bank ownership, acquisition, mergers, and things of this nature. And with all those changes, there also tends to come with it a change in philosophy, which is adverse to the relationship that you had with the previous loan officer, with the previous banking philosophy. And when that happens, then there's a knee-jerk reaction, well, maybe I need to go switch banks. And that is the worst possible time mm-hmm. to be looking for a bank, because you are not in the best bargaining position.
Right.
The best time to look for a bank is when things are going well, when you can go into and shop your business with another bank, and you can go in there with an air of arrogance, of confidence, mm-hmm. That things are going well, I'm happy, the banker's taking care of me, but my accountant, my board of directors, my CPA, again, that wicked partner,
mm-hmm.
they have recommended that I look around just in case something happens down the road where there's a change in ownership and things like that.
Well, see, Harold, I go one step further. I don't say have a standby bank or a loan commitment on standing by. I say have more than one relationship.
Right, right.
I mean, I definitely think you need to have, and if you're, the bigger your business is, maybe you have three relationships,
mm-hmm.
maybe four.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't hurt to do that.
No. And it's a nice way to get your foot in the door and to give them a reason to sell themselves.
And okay. that way, in the life of your company, you don't have to change banks. You just
no.
move the business around a little bit differently within that banking relationship that you have. Stand by. We've got to take a break. Harold, it's 50 after the hour. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about some things to avoid when dealing with an angel investor as we wrap up the hour with our good friend Harold Lacy, the author of Financing Your Business Dreams with Other People's Money. Stay with us. Harold Lacy is our special guest, our very good friend. Harold's been with us many times before. Always is a great resource for us in helping us learn how to finance our business dreams with other people's money, which is the title of his book. And, Harold, give us your email one more time.
Sure. HALLACY@AOL.com.
All right. And let me know, folks, if you need to get in touch with Harold about anything. He'll be glad to work with you if you'd like, or answer any questions. If you need to get in touch with him and you missed that email or you don't know how to get in touch with him, let me know and I'll pass it along. Harold, let's talk about, as we wrap up the hour, let's talk about things to avoid with an angel investor.
Yeah. Let me just share with you some of the things and some of the feedback I've gotten with some of my clients and people I've worked with of things that did not work with angel investors, which is, as we've talked about before in other shows, is a growing source for a lot of new businesses and existing businesses. But
mm-hmm.
some of the things I hear from my clients, some of the things that didn't work out were that the angel brought money to the table, which is what the client and what we all would like as someone seeking angel financing. But the angel had little, in a lot of cases, no previous business experience. They came into the money because of inheritance or because of a retirement settlement or a lawsuit. They came into this money and they're just trying to do something with it. And the problem, the nice thing, they got the money. The bad thing was that they were not able to get that business experience. They had to educate their investor constantly during that relationship of what was going on and a lot
hold
of
their hand almost on a daily basis sometimes.
Oh, a lot of hand holding.
Yeah.
A lot of hand holding.
And there are going to be ups and downs, and when things are down, they get real nervous.
They get very nervous.
And they
don't understand why, and they'll bring up the phrase, but I thought you said. I thought you said. And it's just, they just don't understand the cycle.
Well, not only that, but don't you want an angel investor whenever possible, to also kind of help you with the growth of the business?
Absolutely. And the important thing that I've seen work with clients is if that is spelled out at the beginning, just as we talked about in the last segment with the banker,
right.
With the collateral, these things need to be discussed at the beginning and put in writing with some type of an agreement of
right.
the role that person plays, so that if your needs and the business needs are for their expertise, they are willing to become more involved.
Mm-hmm.
But you're calling the shots. It's at your direction, not their volunteering to spend
All right.
more time.
What's another thing to avoid?
Another thing is you do not want to have an angel that's looking for a job if you don't have a position for them. I mean, you might be needing their expertise, but you don't want someone that wants a place to park themselves every day.
An angel investor when you might be looking for an angel, but you might not be looking for a partner.
That's right.
Or an employee.
And there's a difference.
Yeah.
Major difference, exactly, because with the angel, there's more of a passive role.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the angels, they don't understand it. They want to be more active. They want to assume that partner relationship.
They want a piece of the entrepreneurial action, don't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why when you're interviewing these angel investors, it's important to know what role do they expect to play. Because once you have their money, then it's too late.
You have 15 seconds. What's one more?
Sure. Another thing is that chemistry, that personal identity that you have with that person of, are you on the same wavelength? Do you understand and look at things in a very similar way?
Mm-hmm.
Not always in the exact same way, because you need someone to kind of keep you on your toes.
Right.
But if you feel like you're arguing, and that's a key word, if you're arguing and on a different wavelength, not a good relationship to get into.
Thanks, Harold. You did a great job today. We'll have you back soon. I enjoyed it.
Okay, Jim.
See you later.
Nice talking to you.
Harold Lacy, ladies and gentlemen. Got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. This is Jim Blassie, Small Business Advocate. This program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.